welcome to Joe Goes Everywhere, a Big Blend Radio food, wine, and travel podcast featuring award-winning photographer and travel writer Joe Clark. Let's find out where she's taking us today. Hey, everybody, welcome. You know, Joe goes everywhere. And today she's taking us to historic Georgetown, South Carolina. And I mean historic. No joke. She's written quite a few articles on this destination, and all the links for that, including her website, haveglasswooltravel.com, are in the show notes. So wherever you're listening or watching this, just look below the player and you'll see that info. So welcome back, Joe. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing good. We're in your neighboring state today. We're in North Carolina. So we're not too far away from where we're talking about, Georgetown, right?
That's true. Come on down.
Okay.
We'll go down for lunch.
Yeah. Oh, I want to go back there so bad. Georgetown, Nancy and I stopped by, just kind of a little detour. I think we were coming out of Myrtle Beach, I think. And then
it's about
we were on our way to Georgia.
45 miles.
Yeah, on our way to Georgia. And we stopped and went, look at this historic downtown. This is amazing. And there's like the river with all these boats. I mean, it was just idyllic. So,
those boats behind you?
Yes, yes. It feels like we're in Forrest Gump land, you know?
It looks like it, too.
Mm. It's got some movie history there, doesn't it?
It does. Mm-hmm. I don't know which movies have really been made in town. I've got to do a little research on that. I suppose that's a new article I need to do, huh?
Uh-huh. Every time we talk, suddenly she's got 10 new articles coming up.
10 more ideas.
Yeah, why not? But, yeah.
Of course, The Patriot is based on our area and was filmed nearby. Should have been filmed in our county because a lot of the happenings in The Patriot were there.
Mm.
Mel Gibson as The Patriot, and during the Revolutionary War, he was not called Francis Marion, but that's who he was portraying in this movie. They gave him a different name, I guess, so they could make a movie and say what they wanted to say.
Yeah, not be because it's hard to be 100% historically accurate.
If they used Francis Marion's name, I guess they felt like they would then have to be accurate. And it's hard to be accurate 400 years later.
Yeah. And fiction. It's a story. It's based off of. Yeah. It was based off him.
Mm-hmm. And it certainly showed the men. The men were just marching towards each other in battle.
Isn't that crazy?
And get as close as the guns would reach and then stop and start shooting. Who's going to live through that? And he figured that out, and that was not how men fought in our area anyway. And so that was like the beginning of guerrilla warfare. You hit behind trees and rocks and up a hillside if you could find one, and you attacked, and then you ran away to live to fight another day.
Yeah.
That's how he got the name, the Swamp Fox. And you see a lot of things down here named Swamp Fox. And that was how he earned that name. One of the British generals said he was like a damn sly fox. He just disappeared into the night, into the swamp. We have horses here that are called the Marsh Tacky Ponies. They are a breed that they don't sink down in the muck in the swampy areas, so the men could ride their horses on into the swampy areas, and the British could not.
So they take that. Oh,
that's right.
That's
not
right.
Only did you not know where we're going, you can't follow us if you try.
Exactly. That's kind of that goes back to like the Battle of New Orleans. How the British, they got nailed because everyone came together, Indian tribes, even under Andrew Jackson's rule, which I thought was amazing. And he wasn't doing so well. His health was really poor during the Battle of New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
You know, he had like dysentery and he had intestinal problems. Let's put it that way. But we all know Andrew Jackson did some pretty cruel things, but he did good by the Battle of New Orleans, and
getting everyone together, the Indian tribes, and they knew how to go through the swamps of you know, the South to get there. And that's how they said, that's it. You're not winning this war, because everyone came together and they knew the terrain. And that's what I always find fascinating about wars, as especially like our soldiers going over to Vietnam or even to Europe. Suddenly you're in a different terrain than when you were
Terrain,
raised,
yeah, the terrain, and you don't know where you are, where you're going.
Or if it's on
Your
the
directions
water.
say, oh, head north. Thank you. They don't point out that there's a swamp between you and north.
As the gator crawls, right? That's not
Right.
as
They didn't mention them either.
You know, but and then when you think about getting out on water, when there was warfare on water and pirates and all of that, because I know your coast area has got some pirate stories too. And
Yes, we did.
there's sharks out there. Like, you don't want to be thrown overboard. Heck no. You know what you're going to be? That's like the feeding
Your
frenzies coming
lunch.
to town.
That's called lunch.
But now, okay, we're going to get into the food, all right? Because the food seems like Georgetown has got some amazing offerings. Am I right that you said it's the only Kentucky Fried Chicken with a buffet?
Not the only, but it's the only one I know of and the only one I've been to. I think there's 17 or 20 in the country, but yes, we have claim to fame here. The Kentucky Fried Chicken from 11 to 4 has a buffet, so it's pretty handy if you just want, like me, I love chicken livers, and nobody else makes the chicken livers anymore. You have to drive like 45, 50 miles to get to a KFC that even cooks chicken livers, and then you have to be there on the right day. So it's nice to go down to Georgetown, and I can have a big old pile of chicken livers, and if I'm still craving chicken, I can have a chicken thigh and a couple of biscuits or the
Ooh.
cream potatoes or mac and cheese. They have all the sides on the buffet. They have desserts on the buffet, so you can make a real pig of yourself.
I was just thinking, there's nothing like fried chicken. Seriously.
Well, Southerners, there's the only thing we love more than our fried chicken is a buffet.
And seafood. And this has got to be a big deal, right? Seafood in Georgetown's got to be at the top of the
Definitely.
list too.
Yeah, the seafood was swimming yesterday, maybe this morning. But yeah, most of the places you go are, some of them have their own boats that are the ones behind you. People are going out and catching their own shrimp and seafood, and that's what's being served up in the restaurants, or they're buying them off those boats. So we've got SoCo, Southern Cooking, SOCO, SoCo. They have delicious fresh seafood and wonderful shrimp, but my favorite thing there are their okra strips. They take the okra pods and they split them long ways, and then they give you a jar of tomato bacon jam to dip them in. So just, you dip or use a spoon, it doesn't matter. You're going to eat all that jam for sure. It's wonderful. And the okra strips are dipped in a batter similar to tempura batter and fried. So they're wonderful. I
So
love
basically,
SoCo.
we really need to start getting on the beach and go walking after all of this food here.
Yes. Well, when you tour Georgetown, most of the time you tour by foot. You can take a boat tour out to North Island. The lighthouse is out there. A lot of shelling is out there, and I'll show you some shells in a minute. You can do a trolley, a little trolley car that's pulled by a jeep, and you can, so you can, if you don't want to walk all day, you can take that. But there are walking tours. Paige Sawyer will take you and walk your little legs off, but he goes slow. I could keep up, and I stop every five steps to take a picture. So even if you're slow and taking pictures every five steps like I do, you can keep up with Paige. He's marvelous to tour with because he has a notebook filled with pictures from the 18 and early 1900s of Georgetown and these houses, and pictures of art. He has a picture of a portrait of Theodosia Burr Alston, who spent her last night alive, really, that we know of, in Georgetown. She was married to an Alston, and she was the daughter of Aaron Burr. So she came to town, and there was a farewell party for her. She was leaving the next day on a ship, I think headed to England. And she spent the night there, and he stands in front of that house. He has a picture of the house from 100 years ago, a picture of her. And so you're standing and looking at the pictures and looking at the house behind him. He talks. But she got on that ship, and the ship was lost at sea, and she was never heard from again. So there's stories, there's ghost stories that he tells.
I was going to say, I think Georgetown has got to have some good ghost stories.
They say Georgetown is the most haunted town in the country.
Oh, I want to go. I mean, when you spent the night there, did things go bump in the night?
No, I don't pay a lot of attention to that because I have a tin roof on my house, and the raccoons think it's a slide. So they run across my roof and slide down the other side. So I have things going bump all night anyway. So I sort of ignore that. But we have the gray man who walks the coast with a lantern, and he is seen right before hurricanes. He's seen before bad storms. So if somebody sees the gray man, we know there's going to be a bad hurricane. We have another one that she was secretly engaged, and so she wore her ring on a chain under her clothing, and she searches for her ring that was lost, and so she's seen a lot of times around Polly's Island searching for her ring.
Wow.
She was buried in Polly's Island. So,
so you've got all these different islands that you can go to on boats. Can you kayak and do that kind of thing too?
Oh, yes, you can. There's lots of places to go kayaking, up and down the rivers, through the marsh. There are a lot of companies where you can rent kayaks. You can rent and just go out on your own, or you can go out with a tour group.
I need a guide.
Yeah, I want to get back. You take me out in the swamp, I'll be waiting for the swamp fox to show up.
Yeah, really? Well, hey, you've got a swamp fox tour, don't you?
We do. We have swamp fox tour, but that's walking around downtown.
Okay, so you're not swampy there yet.
No, we're not swampy.
But you're downtown. There. Your downtown has those incredible oak trees.
Yes, the live oak, the southern live oaks. They drape across the street everywhere. Most of them are filled with the Spanish moss, which is neither Spanish nor moss. So it was just completely
And don't touch misnamed. The moss. Do not touch the moss.
Well, it does tend to have chiggers or red bugs, as other people
and
call
I've
them.
Done that. I'm stupid. Even when I read not to do it, I was like, oh, well,
you
let's
still
see.
Had to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a little bit blonde, but yeah, and let me tell you, they like to cover your body.
They do. And they dig in.
Yep.
You have to cover them with fingernail polish to smother them, basically. That's how you get rid of them. Or scratch them off. You can take a straight sewing needle and scratch and get them off.
All right, don't touch the moss. That's not moss.
There you go. It's
don't,
not.
Don't touch it. Don't touch the
it's
not
pretty,
moss.
But leave it where it is.
It is very romantic. It is.
It is.
And
it is.
Mysterious, like for Halloween and stuff. That's, you know, it can go
spooky.
Either way. But
it's
that,
pretty
you see, but this is about the South. What's mystical and romantic like can also turn the other way and go like, okay, what is that coming out of the swamp? You know what I mean? So, well, because Southern fiction is some of the best. I mean, you just
scariest.
Can't beat a good Southern fiction, right?
That's
you know,
true.
Really. And I love the South. I'm so happy to be back. It's so cool to come
You'll
back.
You'll just
through.
Have to stay here. You have to plan your winters better and quit driving through snowstorms.
I know.
Here in the winter doing yoga with us on the beach.
I want to do yoga on the beach.
Well, come on.
You know our friend Stephen Karen, you know them, right? From The Lion and the Rose, the
yes.
Bed and Breakfast. They just did
up in Asheville.
She did goat yoga and apparently didn't get very far because she was playing with the goats
playing
too much
with the
to
goat.
Do her yoga, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But the beach yoga, tell us, go back to the beach because you were talking about seashelling and this is something in the South that you can do that you don't get to do all over the country, quite frankly. The coast
no,
is
you
different.
Don't. You don't.
So
and
tell
a
us
lot of
about
times
this.
You go to beaches and don't find shells. You have to wade out and dig your toes down deep in the sand and dig up shells. And usually they're live shells and you're not supposed to take them. Well, I'll show you a couple. This is a lettered olive. And this is the South Carolina state shell.
I like it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful shell, and it does look like somebody
lettered it.
Letters all over it, little letters on it, etched it. So that's the South Carolina state shell. North Carolina is the Scotch bonnet.
Oh.
Okay, and I
we
will
are going to
show
have to do a show on shells. I like, well, because they're also ancient history because of fossils, too.
They are.
There's
they
a whole
are
connection.
Fossils. They are. You hear people talk about whelk shells. And so this is a whelk. And now this one is called a knobbed whelk. See all the little bumpy knobs on it. And this is called a channel whelk.
It's swirly.
Kind of shaped the same way as this one, but it is smooth on the top.
Yeah.
But they still have the cylindrical nautilus look. You know, the
it
nautilus
looks like
shell is
it's a cinnamon roll.
Yeah, like cochlear. It's like the inside of your ear, actually, the cochlear.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, it's that cochlear part of your ear. That's where that name comes from, is that shape. And they both have that. This one's just covered up in knobs to keep things from biting it, I guess.
Huh. Who knew?
So,
this is cool.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a whole show on shells. I love
we
shells.
We can do that for sure. But so people be able to go out there, that's really cool. Because a lot of people do it in crafts and, you know, decor for their homes as well, having the shells. And I don't know, if you're going to have an outdoor bar, don't you want to have some shells next to it?
Definitely. And if you can't find your own, we have lots of beach shops that have shells that you can buy. But, you know, where's the fun in that?
Yeah, well, shopping, it seems that was also a thing. When you go to Georgetown, shopping is a thing to do.
It is. There's all kinds of little shops in Georgetown. You can walking up and down Front Street is just the greatest thing. We have a furniture store that is a monster. I think it covers an entire city block, maybe more. It's huge. Augustus, and they will bring you out something to drink and eat while you shop. They're very, very entertaining. Yes. We have a store that has darling children's clothing with smocked dresses and rompers, smocked and cross-stitched and embroidered. So old-fashioned Southern clothing. We have some antique shops. We have lots of museums. We have
I want to go to the Gullah Museum. Am I
the
saying
Gullah
it correctly?
Museum. Yeah. The Gullah Museum is very interesting. The couple that started that are both gone now, but their children have inherited the museum and are keeping it open, thank goodness, because it is very interesting. It's not just about South Carolina and the African American history, it's about the African history too. So it's about the different parts of Africa that the slaves were brought from. So I think it's a very interesting place for everybody, but I think if you are a Black American, it would be even more interesting for you to start learning about, you know, I know where my people came from. My people came from Scotland and Wales and Ireland and England. If my people came from Africa, I would want to know, did they come from South Africa or
It's
Namibia
so hard.
or Ethiopia? You know, where did they come from? And what was life like there? What are their traditions and how many of those traditions are here? And a lot of those traditions are here in the South because the enslaved people brought those traditions here and continued them. And we've adopted them too. I mean, ochre came from Africa. And, you know, no self-respecting Southerner turns down okra.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when we were in Louisiana, Natchitoches, Louisiana, we went to a sharecropper cabin, which is part of the Oakland Plantation within Cane River Creole National Historical Park, and met with Elvin Shields. And he was making what's called plantation toys, and they're wire. And, you know, you wheel little cars and all that. But I grew up with them, with my African friends in South Africa and Kenya. Exactly the same. And so he's also very into genealogy. And we're trying, like, he was trying to figure out what tribe he was from. And it's very difficult to find. And it's hard because the tribes were nomadic and throughout the entire continent. So
it's not like they weren't in Virginia and stayed in Virginia for 400 years like my people. They were roaming all over the country.
But also back in Africa, the tribes were,
That's like what
the Zulus weren't always just from Natal, you know? So it's complex and difficult to do, but that's why when you go to these museums, you can, I think, even connect with, oh, I've got some certain traditions in my family that maybe you can learn through that as well. So I want to go. I'm so like, I'm kind of homesick for Africa, you know? Times. Well, so I need to come, and I need to come back down there, you know. So
and we have Eve's. Miss Eve has a Caribbean soul food restaurant, and so she has oxtail that are just absolutely melt in your mouth, and collards and other southern sides. But it's a great place to eat, and you'll have some of the Caribbean culture.
Good music too.
Her husband was from the Caribbean, so she learned a lot of the recipes and cooking styles from him, although she was from Georgetown originally.
Okay, very cool. So the history of this community also goes back to what, the 1500s. So in some of your articles, you were mentioning that this actually is allegedly the oldest city. See, Pensacola also was
Saint Augustine.
But Pensacola is also going, hello, we were the oldest town, or so I don't know, settlement,
oldest
or
town
city.
Maybe, but yeah,
settlement,
right?
Yeah,
right.
And Saint Augustine's a city.
Out on Winyah Bay, there's four rivers that converge and forms the Winyah Bay, and so it was a busy seaport, but when it was first settled, the first thing there was an outpost, and it didn't last long, and there were no remnants of it left. There were Spanish, and it had a name which escapes me at the moment. But it had a Spanish name, a long name. And it predated the St. Augustine settlement, I want to say, by about 30 years. It was quite a bit. But as I say, there was not any remnant of it left. So there's no documentation. There's no proof other than there was a settlement there or an outpost there. And they had the Spaniards, and they brought some enslaved people with them. And I think this was probably the first slave uprising on American soil, because the slaves rose up against the Spaniards, and they left and joined an Indian tribe here in South Carolina. So they ran off with the Indians. And the settlement did not survive. So that's what little history we know of that settlement. And it, but it's Georgetown is the third largest town or city in Charleston was founded first, and about 40 years later, Beaufort was founded, and about 18 years later than Georgetown, as far as official founding dates.
Wow.
So we claim to be the third oldest city.
Oh, well, you go. Hey, old is good, right?
That's right.
Well, and you got lighthouses too. See, that's a thing. I have a thing about lighthouses.
I love lighthouses too. This is behind me in the background picture is the North Island Lighthouse. Mm. You can't go up in it anymore, and it is on an island, so unless you have a boat, you're not going to get there. It's not like it's not like St. Augustine where you can drive around the block and park and go walk up to the lighthouse. This one is definitely out on an island.
Cool.
Oh
man, this is a good, so this is your backyard basically.
Speaking it's 30 of yards, miles from where I live,
and you gotta
I taught in Georgetown. I taught in Georgetown for 21 years. So I know the area. Back in 1720s, Elijah Screven.
I was going to say, in 1720s, you were not teaching at that point.
He drew out, he drew out the development of the city in blocks. And that is still, that grid is still there today. The houses, some of the houses that were built then are still there today. So it's amazing to walk through Georgetown and see the history.
Well, to me, it is so important that we keep these buildings because it's the integrity of the cultures and the peoples and the story. I mean, you know, there's so many developments going up now that you don't know where you are. I talk about this, it's kind of a pet peeve of, you know, you just don't know where you are anymore. And it's just so crucial to save history. It really is.
It is.
You know, and having
to know who you are and where you came from.
That's why I like bed and breakfasts and businesses that take on historic buildings and homeowners who take on historic buildings. They're preserving somebody's story, somebody's legacy.
And a lot of them in Georgetown are preserving their history. Some of these houses have not changed hands as far as the family line.
Wow. And,
some folks have bought one of the older homes, and it is, you're saying, a bed and breakfast. We have the only bed and brew in South Carolina. So you can have a bed and a beer.
I'm happy.
There's a beer parlor downstairs. So, you know, once you go to your room at night, if you're a little thirsty, you can go downstairs and quench that thirst.
Okay, I'm in. And you're going to be a little thirsty because you had all that fried chicken, you know.
That's beforehand. Right, and all that fried okra and the shrimp and grits, which are pretty spicy. You go to the Mexican cantina, the Low Country cantina, and they have some really, really good shrimp and grits. And I don't know how to pronounce it. Elote. Mm-hmm. It's a Mexican corn dish.
Elote,
Elote.
It's delicious.
And they will cut the corn off the cob so you don't have to sit there and, you know, make a mess and slobber all over yourself trying to eat corn on the cob in a restaurant. They
but
cut
it
off into a nice little bowl and make a nice presentation of it with the roasted corn and the cheese. Oh, it's delicious. It's one of my favorite things that they make.
I love elote, and it's special. We've got a recipe for it too, and we like to make it. I'll send it to
try
you.
That.
I know you like recipes, right?
Recipe.
I think you do. You have a whole website dedicated to recipes.
There you go. Recipes, travel, culture.
See.com. Everyone go there. And she's written about Georgetown on there too. You've got quite an extensive, and then She Buys Travel. You've got on there. So everyone, again, those links.
And Foodie Flash Packer is where you go to read about all the restaurants in Georgetown and what to order at each one, all my little insider tips.
Yeah. Before we close off on the conversation about Georgetown, I have to bring up the gardens. I want to go to the gardens.
Yes.
Don't touch the moss.
Brook Green Gardens. Yeah. They were purchased back in the 1930s, four plantations, four adjoining plantations. So it goes from the river to the ocean, because the four plantations, of course, were rice plantations. South Carolina and Georgetown specifically was the largest grower of rice in the world. Mm-hmm. At one time, the rest of the world was buying their rice from Georgetown. So it's an interesting, again, we have a rice museum in Georgetown, which will teach the culture. And at Brook Green, you can take a pontoon boat down the river and they talk about the rice culture, and you see rice trunks. A trunk is, it's kind of like a gate that you can open and close that keeps the water from flowing in or from flowing out, because rice fields have to be flooded for part of the growing season. So Brook Green Garden has that in their culture, and they have a trekker that will take you all through the woods, and you see the rice mills where they milled the rice and got it ready for shipment. There's an old cemetery from the 1700s back there.
Oh, I need to go.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then, of course, the garden proper has beautiful gardens and sculptures. Archer and Anna Huntington bought these four plantations and turned them into a sculpture garden, mostly to begin with to display Anna's sculptures. They had a lot of money. Archer was from a railroad family. I think that's where most of their money came from, but he was a scholar. He transcribed El Cid into English. He
oh wow,
transcribed Spanish materials into English. So he was a noted scholar and a poet. And Anna sculpted, she sculpted into her 90s. And the gardens are where that the sculpting was displayed. Her sister was also a sculptor. Across the highway, which at that point was still part of the Brook Green property, is now called Huntington Beach State Park. And Huntington Beach has Atalaya, which is, I think, Spanish for watchtower. But Atalaya is built in a square, and in the center is a garden and a large tower that acted as a cistern and held water for the property. But they wintered there even when they still lived in New York. They wintered at Brook Green and at Atalaya. And she had a huge open air studio there. And when you tour Atalaya, you see the stables and you see things labeled like the bear cage. And people think they had bears. Yes, she sculpted from live animals. She wanted to be totally accurate. So she sculpted from live bears, wild boars, whatever she was sculpting, it was there on the property. And a funny story about Anna, she would buy these poor, decrepit, broken down horses. Now she was doing a sculpture of I think it was Don Quixote and his poor starving horse, but before she could finish, she had fattened the horse up to the point that she couldn't use it and she'd have to buy another one. So I don't know how many horses she ended up buying, because they would get fat and happy before she finished this poor decrepit starving horse sculpture.
Oh my gosh. But that's good that she was helping him. Hey,
yeah, that's right.
She was
right.
A horse rescuer after all of that.
He was.
Wow, wow. Okay, you've sold me.
Interesting person, interesting
you've
person.
You sold me on going there.
Yeah, definitely. Sure. And don't miss going to Hobkaw Barony. Hobkaw was owned by Bernard Baruch. Teddy Roosevelt visited there, Winston Churchill. Franklin wow. Roosevelt. His daughter, Belle, she was actually in France. She was a noted equestrian, and she was in France when World War II started, and she came back home to take care of the property, and she ended up buying part and inheriting part, but she ended up the owner of Hobcob Barony. But there's an interesting story about her. She could outride and outshoot almost any man. So she was very tall too. So she was not a catch. Mm. Good thing she wasn't interested. She wasn't looking for a man, because they would not have been looking for her, because she could outdo them in almost anything. But when she came back home,
you go, girl.
I know, really. When she came back home, she was asked to monitor someone who they thought was a spy, and they were working out of Polly's Island, a German spy, and she caught them.
Wow.
Yeah, so we've got all kinds of, you talk about history, it started with the swamp fox, it started back in the 1600s, and it did not end. It still hasn't ended. We are still making history in Georgetown.
yeah, and you've got the indigenous people prior to that too, so you got to think, you know.
And we still have them, the Waccamaw Indian people still hold a yearly powwow. You will have to be here in November. It's usually, I think it's the first full weekend in November. But they have tribal grounds outside of Aynor, which is actually in Horry County, which is where I live in Horry County. But yeah, they have a really interesting powwow. They do the fire dances and the all kinds of interesting handcrafts. They show you how the original Indians survive.
Mm. This is cool. This is very cool.
It is.
History and
You're
nature.
Have to come and stay a month for me to show you
that. I see that. I mean, you've got
history,
you've
got nature, wineries. Food. We haven't even talked about wineries.
Oh my gosh. See, now you got me. You got me even more. You just like put me in the bottle, take me there. It's okay. It sounds good.
That's
you know,
right.
But the history, I know you're definitely into history. We're looking forward to next month because you're taking us to Gettysburg on a family history journey, right?
I am. I'm riding into the history of my family on a horse.
That's so, it, man. Yeah, dude, making prints across the prints across the country,
right.
But Gettysburg,
prints across Gettysburg.
Well, Gettysburg, the history of Gettysburg is deep, and it's a very overwhelming place to visit. It's just so much. It's when you go there, and if you haven't been, be prepared for that. And so I'm really looking forward to hearing your family story. And everyone, that is May 12th. We will be back, and that's a good day. That's Nancy's birthday. So, you know.
Ooh. Well, we'll have to toast Nancy for her birthday.
I know. We may have to have wine. You know.
Always.
Okay.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
I mean, yeah. What?
All right. I am ready.
Oh, my. She is. She's always ready.
Hey, this show is at 7 o'clock. So.
You can do anything at any
time. It's wine time.
Well, cheers to you, Joe.
Cheers
have glass will travel, right?
That's right. That's right.
Haveglasswilltravel.com is the website for Joe. She is here. When, Joe, are you here? Every?
Ask. Call it triple S.
Yes.
Second Sundays at 7.
See, she's got the triple S. Don't mess with her.
That's it.
Don't mess with the
triple S.
Triple
S. Second Sundays at 7.
And if you miss the original airing, it is there forever. Joe is here with us forever. We love that. Thanks so much, Joe.
I do too.
Thanks for joining us. Keep up with Big Blend Radio's Joe Goes Everywhere podcast on bigblendradio.com. Keep up with Joe's adventures. Go to haveglasswilltravel.com and recipestravelculture.com.